which is near and dear to most of our hearts, about wheat.
Well, good morning, everyone. First of all, I would like to thank you for inviting me. Thanks, Yixun. It is real pleasure for me to be here and be able to show you part of my dissertation, a result of this year's field season. My today's talk title is Low Phytate and TPCB1 Traits in Wheat. Is this a biofortification winner combo? Well, we're going to try to answer this question with my results. So as a plant biologist, we know that we have two different approaches to biofortify crops. The first one is increasing micronutrients. That means, like, you know, you are going to put like more nutrients in the kernel. Decreasing anti-nutrients, you are taking some anti-nutrients, so you are making all those nutrients more available. But what about if we combine those two and we make a third approach? So this is why what I want to do during my dissertation is combining both approaches, making a combo, so which make it harder. So if we want, what kind of sources we have in wheat in order to perform each of these approaches? So if we want to increase micronutrients in wheat, we can take advantage of the TPCB1 allele. This is initially was present in Triticum turgidum dicocoides, which increased grain iron and zinc, but also grain protein concentration. So this allele accelerates senescence and increases nutrient remobilization and grain protein content. Have shown no or very small reduction in grain yield in previous research. And this allele also causes a positive correlation between nitrogen, iron, zinc, and grain protein content. If we want to decrease anti-nutrients in wheat, we are going to take advantage of we're going to use LPA1. LPA1 was created by Mary Gutierrez 11 years ago, around 2005. She's here in the audience. Thanks, Mary. It's the only mutant that we know in wheat that reduces phytic acid up to 35%. Actually, it's the only mutant that reduces phytic acid, okay? So as we can see in this chart, so we have the wild type and the phytic acid fraction, like, is basically most of the phosphorus in the kernel. And just a little fraction is just an organic phosphorus. So when this wild type is converted to the low phytate, so this fraction of the phytic acid is reduced up to 35%. So this is pretty good reduction. So, but why we want to reduce phytic acid? So we know that the phytic acid decreases gut absorption of the divalent elements like calcium, iron, and zinc in monogastric animals, including humans. So these molecules, big molecules of phosphorus, this is phytic acid, that basically trap these divalent elements, making them unavailable for digestion. So in this case, it's an example where the phytic acid is trapping an iron molecule, like forming this monophoric phytate, making the iron unavailable. So that causes a lot of pollution, because yes, the molecule per se has a lot of phosphorus that is unavailable, so it causes a lot of pollution from animal waste. And we need to have this number in mind, that around 45 to 90 million metric tons of brand are produced annually worldwide, and most of these brand is going to for animal feeding, so causing a lot of pollution. And I just want to talk in my next slide about a brand and why we need to take care about the brand. So the phytic acid is the main reservoir of phosphorus in seed. It's found mainly in aluron layer, and the aluron layer is here in this cross section in the kernel, botanically belong to the endosperm, but get detached together with the pericarp during milling process. So that means the brand contains a lot of aluron layer and, of course, a lot of phytate. If we talk about human nutrition, we know that in developing countries, human communities, they use a lot of whole wheat flour, or high extraction flour that contains a lot of bran and, of course, a lot of phytate. So the high phytate contributes or increase mineral deficiency. But also we need to keep in mind that the U.S. is the biggest exporter of wheat worldwide and export around 27 million metric tons of wheat every year, so mainly to developing countries. So this is a big deal. As I said, we want to combine both approaches in my dissertation as a combo, and this is our project goal, combining low phytate opiate and high protein, GPC, is how we are going to call it during the rest of my presentation, traits in Great Plains adapted wheat, we will increase iron, zinc, and phosphorus concentration and bioavailability without negatively affecting grain yield. How do we do that? So we basically cross both parents that have GPCB1 and another one that provide the LPA trait. We advance that population to F5, and then we phenotype and genotype for phytate and GPC. For phytate, we use this colorimetric method where we identify the LPA material, so the recommended bread lines that they have the LPA material, like trait, and the ones that they have the high or they are the wild type. But also, we use the molecular marker to identify the ones that they were positive for GPC. So after having this data, we created four different groups. One that is LPA GPC, LPA wild type that doesn't have the GPC, of course, and the wild type GPC, and the wild type group that doesn't have any of the two alleles. So, and these are the number of reels that we got for each of the groups. So after having creating these groups, you know, from laboratory data, it was the time to put them in the field and see, you know, the performance. So we plant them with 10 adapted lines and two parents as a check, okay, in a randomized complete block design in four different locations, two in the western and two in the eastern Nebraska. So I just want to show you pretty fast. This is Nebraska map, and this is the precipitation distribution layer. So we can see the western locations and the eastern locations, they are pretty different in terms of precipitation. So the eastern, they get more rain during the year than the western locations. So the variables that we use were the variables that actually we evaluate was in essence yield, test weight, protein using an NIR machine, and iron and zinc concentration, total concentration of these minerals in the kernel. But also we heavily took soil samples from our fields because, of course, you know, most of these variables are get some influence from the soil nutritionals. So we sampled two different depths, and we also collected GPS coordinates that together with the soil analysis allow us to generate estimates of each individual plot. So that was pretty powerful during my analysis. So this is the first result. So we have the correlation, the phenotypic correlation of the variables. We found that the zinc was highly negatively correlated with senescence. Okay, and this is not a secret, we found that the protein and yield was negatively correlated also with yield. Protein was negatively correlated with yield, that's pretty common. And we found negative correlations in between yield and iron and zinc, those these two minerals that we are testing. And we found that the protein is positively correlated with iron and zinc. So, but the take-home message here is like protein, the protein, iron, and zinc are negatively correlated with yield. So that's the main thing. You know, that's pretty. That means like this is going to be hard for us as a breeder, you know, to put these traits into like a pretty good cultivar. So, and in this table, I just want to show what. Pretty much, it's a summary of the analysis of variants of my genotypic groups. We also calculate G/E interaction and the heritability. So the most relevant here is that we couldn't find any significant difference of my between my genotypic groups for yield. We found a significant G/E interaction in yield as an essence. Interestingly, we found like pretty good heritability for gray protein, zinc and test weight, and a medium heritability for iron. And this heritability is in the broad set heritability. So from now on, I'm going to show you each individual variable that we use, but combine the analysis. A combined analysis for the four locations, okay? So this is yield. We didn't find any significant difference between the groups and the controls. And this was really impressive. I mean, we were really excited about seeing this. We couldn't find any difference between the controls and the groups. So we also include, of course, the soil data into the analysis, and we run an ANCOA, and we couldn't find any significant difference either. But we need to be fair, you know, and we need to explain a little bit more about the controls that we use. I explained later that the checks that I used, there were 10 different checks, and they have, in this graph, you can see the distribution of all those checks. So they have pretty broad distribution, okay? Some of the checks, they didn't perform that well this year specifically, but in general, my groups performed really well. So, and that's, this is really encouraging. So the take home message number one, we couldn't find any significant difference in grain yield due to LPA or GPC in this population. For test weight, we know the test weight, it is a synonym of kernel health or kernel quality, okay, sorry. And of course, it's related with baking quality. So we found here that the combination of LPA GPC caused a negative effect in the test weight, okay? So unfortunately, these are the results. I mean, that combination was deleterious in some way for test weight. For grain protein concentration, we found that the LPA by itself caused a deleterious or negative effect in grain protein, but not the other groups. We found pretty much the same thing in iron, in total grain iron concentration, where the LPA by itself caused a negative effect in the iron concentration. But we couldn't find any difference between the groups and the controls in the zinc concentration. So as a take-home message number two, I would say that the grain protein and iron concentration was depressed by LPA alone, but not by GPC. Zinc concentration was not affected. And the final take-home message is that LPA-GPC combination didn't lower yield, grain protein or total grain iron and zinc. And this combination would be beneficial if bioavailable iron and zinc have increased. We don't have that data yet, and this data is going to be really, really interesting to see probably in the next couple of months. We're still working in the assay. But these results are pretty encouraging. I mean, like, we know as a breeder that we usually go after yield as a priority number one. Priority number two, yield. So, and we're combining the best of the two worlds here, at least in this population. So, ongoing experiments, we have that the phytic acid, we are still working the phytic acid content for the three locations, for the four locations that we tested. We are still working the bioavailable iron and zinc assay. We hope to have that result for the beginning of the next year. But also, we have a mapping population for LPA. Like, we know little about this trait LPA, so we are trying to map the gene or the genes involved. Hopefully we're going to find like a pretty informative marker that we can convert it to like a molecular marker that we can use for tests, like future populations with these traits. And also, we were running, you can see these plants here, actually these are the combination of my four groups in a greenhouse, in a state-of-the-art greenhouse in UNL, in University of Nebraska. Using LegmaTech technology, what basically we use infrared fluorescence and RGBD and high spectral cameras just to see if we can find any correlation of phytate and protein in the kernel with phosphorus and nitrogen, of course, in the leaf tissue. So there is a lot of information. We already collect all the information, just we need to find a way how to analyze 1 terabyte of data. So that's pretty much it. I just want to thanks to my committee, Dr. Graybosch, Dr. Steve Bessinger, Dr. Brian Waters, the statistician Ken Eskridge, Damien Rose, my co-mentor, Mary Gutierrez, Brian Winhall, the USDA ARS staff, and the UNL with the staff. With that, thank you very much. Unfortunately, no, we didn't have any. I would say no relate. I mean, no bad germination at all in this population. Yep, pretty good. Pretty good job, Mary. Yeah. Well, actually, the first cross, the Dichocoides, was made like, I don't know, like 3 or 4 decades ago, easily. So it was a long time ago. So now we're talking about like this integration, the GPC integration has been like around for decades. So now we're using pretty much like pretty good adaptive material as a source of GPC. So, the numbers of the reals are pretty low, the ratios are pretty low, but basically because the ratios of the LPA genes are pretty low. Usually you work pretty low ratios or frequencies.